Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today's episode is all about game management. How does game management actually work? What is game management, first off? How does it work? Who's good at it? Who's not good at it? How do we get better at it? So there's a whole bunch of facets of game management. There's before the game, during the game, at halftime, and after the game. So there's all these phases. What should coaches be doing in each one of those phases? What should they not be doing? How do they get better? That is the subject of today's chat with Benjamin Rogers. You see, there's so much to being a coach. It's not just training during the week, handling player issues, handling the club logistics and registration things and the paperwork. It goes well beyond that, as you all know, and game management is one such critical piece of the puzzle. Lucky for you, coaches, if you go to 343coaching.com, we have both free and premium programs for you there. Join thousands of your colleagues who have gone through the program. And there is a bit of game management there in the program, but it doesn't start with year one, because if I'm being honest with you, I think year one should be more about the training grounds. How do you as a coach become a better trainer, a better developer of the actual talent on the football pitch? Things like your first touch, things like building out of the back, things like teaching your midfield how to move, teaching how to attack, teaching how to defend. I think those are the key critical components, because if you don't have that under your belt, how are you going to do proper game management? To do proper game management, guys, you have to know a little something about the game, and you have to know a little something about the expectations, the realistic expectations of your players during a match. So it comes a little bit later in the program, but why wait? I think it's a mistake. You should have joined yesterday. You can join today. Hop on over to 343coaching.com. And parents, you are the biggest and most important managers for your child. Go to 343masterclass.com. Last but certainly not least, if you are coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 format, we've got you covered at 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, there's a number of gold nuggets in this one. I hope you enjoy, and I hope you gain quite a bit of insight. Here we go.
Season's over, G. We lost yesterday. PKs.
Oh, no shit. Okay.
Yeah. Our backup couldn't hang, dude.
What was the regulation time score?
It was 1-1. They scored an early free kick, completely savable goal. And then, yeah, G, the last 10 minutes, we were chasing a goal. And went to a 3-4-3 formation.
Mm-hmm.
Goal, dude.
Nice.
Yeah, dude. It was like, I'm like, man, we should have played this formation a long time ago.
Well, if you have like three center backs, right?
Yeah.
Center back profiles, then it's golden.
Oh yeah, dude. We were just creating chance after chance after we overloaded the middle. But yeah, and then for the state tournament, it was like 1 15-minute period of overtime, golden goal, nobody scored. And then yeah, PKs, the keeper didn't save any. So
is it bittersweet because now that you're liberated from that responsibility or no?
Yeah, it really is, dude. It really is. And I don't know, last night I went to sleep like peaceful for the first time in a while. So, you know, it's a grind, dude. I mean, you start all the way in the summer, you're training in the off season, and then once season starts, dude, it's like every single day, you know?
Yeah.
And not just on the training field, but constantly working with the administration, athletic director, hearing from the parents, what they think. So it was nonstop, man. I'm kind of glad it's over.
No, in many ways, because I've only done it once, right? One season.
Right.
And in many ways, it's way worse than regular youth club football. Not only is it every day, it's just, there's like all the organization stuff too. Like there's the bus, right? Oh, we got to make sure to be there on time for the bus, right? And then everybody's there, but there's one person missing or two. And like, what do you can get on the phone and text, hey, where's, you know, Claudio at or whatever. It's like a disaster. Oh no, I'm going to be late. Oh, can your uncle take you to the game? Cause the bus is leaving, man. It's a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, it is. In a way it's stressful, but I think it's like, for me, it was probably more rewarding than like my club teams, just because like, you know, the day before the final, the whole school is there. They did like a rally for the team. All the principals coming up to you saying like, oh, like congratulations, amazing first season, you know. But so in those moments, it was cool just to see the support and everybody there. But yeah, dude, now that it's over. I think I'm going to jet off to Hawaii or something for like a week.
And so at some point, we should maybe talk a little bit about high school soccer. Maybe not this episode, obviously, but
give me a week.
But a minute, because there are some positives associated with it. And that's one positive is that actually has more of a club, a real club feel than the other stuff that we have in this country. And you just described it, right? Because the whole student body is behind you. They're all kind of united under one umbrella for real. So I don't know. There's that among other things.
I like to look at high school soccer as almost like the national team, because you have all your kids coming from different clubs, you know, and then during this time of 3 months, they have to be together. You know, they can't go and train with club. And it's like, yeah, their country is like their school, and all their students are behind them, supporting them. And some of them like love repping the school. And for some of them, they're like, oh, I can't wait to get back to club. You know, so it's an interesting dynamic for sure.
And the same thing with college, right? Everybody always looks at college football. Look at college football, how amazing it is, how the stadiums get full with 50,000, 70,000 people. And guys, it's because it's more of a club than any MLS franchise. It's more of a club than any USL team. It's a real club. Everybody's, they all share same values, and they all spend, you know, 3, 4, 5 years at the same institution. And even after you're gone and graduate from the institution, there's a part of you that's still part of that institution. And then you'll continue going to the games and supporting the team from afar. So it's an interesting dynamic, man.
You're talking about college American football though, right? Not college
American
soccer.
Football. Yeah, American football. American football.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's get into it, brother.
Go for it.
So there's a module within, I think it's phase 4 of the 343 coaching education platform. And this one is introduction to game management. So in this exact module, it's a collection of real game management moments from Brian, meaning, you know, before the game, halftime, after the game, talking with the team, the day before the game, you know, at the hotel, breaking down how they want to play. So I wanted to kind of go through this module with you. I know a lot of these questions might be better suited for Brian to answer, since he was the one actually in those moments, but I know that you were right there next to him. So I think, you know, you'll do a good job of answering. And yeah, I think it'll tie in well. I mean, I don't know if you saw, Gary, one of the most recent audiograms that I posted about kind of the coaches that just sit there and let the kids play. It generated a lot of debate in the comments. You know, people are still like debating with each other within the comments as of today. So I think that'll tie in well to the discussion today. But just to like simply put it to start, you know, what do you think at the highest levels of youth soccer, when it comes to game management, what separates the good coaches from the mediocre ones? And if you want to start with in match moments, meaning coaching from the sideline, we could start there. Or if you want to start with, you know, the pregame talk or halftime speech, wherever you want to start, but just in general, you know, what separates the best coaches when it comes to game management?
Yeah. Well, number one by far is the ones who actually do it versus the ones who don't do it, period.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? Because everybody thinks that they do game management, probably, right? Every coach probably thinks they do something. And game management isn't just, you know, giving a halftime talk for 10 minutes and just making shit up, because I know I've been there. I've seen it. I've done it even in the very earliest stages of when I was coaching. It's like, oh, what do I tell them at halftime? Like, you have no idea what to say, Benny. And I'm sure you've done it as well, because all first time coaches, it's a brand new experience. You're probably very emotional watching your first matches and your first seasons or first season under your belt. And come halftime, whether you're winning, drawing, or losing, and in different magnitudes, you've never had to do any of this before. And you're like, what the hell do I tell these guys? And so you just make shit up many times. You've heard the expression, fake it till you make it, right? So I would say, first and foremost, if you're early in the coaching career, and I don't blame you, you're probably not doing game management or good game management at all, okay? The information you're giving is probably nonsense garbage. So let's stick with the halftime talk, okay? Because I started there, apparently. The ones who do a good job, obviously a little bit more experienced, and the ones who have seen a lot of patterns throughout their experience of winning, drawing, or losing when halftime comes around. The ones who have seen a lot of patterns when you're being dominated or you are the one doing domination. And the ones who actually maybe jot down notes during the first half of the game, I think is a good tool to utilize to mark down what your observations are. So maybe your right winger Mark, you know, who you've been training for a while, is not losing his man. He's just chilling there on the sideline waiting for the ball to get to him instead of him being engaged in the game. So that's something very important on an individual basis to highlight an individual and have corrective action take place for an individual. And then there's the collect. So you do that with all the big deficiencies for maybe two individuals or three or four, however many disasters may have existed in the first half. You try to confront those things. Sometimes you don't have time though, Benny, because what if you have four players who have all been a disaster and they know better, obviously, because you've trained them as to what the responsibilities are. You don't have time. You can't really spend time highlighting all four of them necessarily. So that's when a technical staff or an assistant coach or two assistant coaches really help the game management side of the equation. So that's another differentiator between what team you're on versus another, because you can split up responsibilities. So there's the individual and then there's the collective, Ben. And you, again, maybe jotting down notes. Why is the collective not operating the way it should be operating? Are you not building out of the back properly? Why are you not building out of the back? Maybe it's a spacing issue. Maybe they're running a 3-4-3, like you said you were running. And so now you have a front line of three against you. And so you're maybe 4 versus 3, and your team can't handle 4 versus 3 because they're not very good at building out of the back already. And so what are solutions to that? Maybe in that instance, you bypass building out of the back. You know, maybe you even bypass the midfield. Maybe you go long because if they're playing such a high line, there is space behind them and you just go long. So that's just an example of things that you have to observe in the match. And then maybe you jot it down and you highlight them what the problem is and you highlight them how to solve the problem. So I think those two are the key things. And then the third, but perhaps less important, might be the motivational pep talk. I think a lot of inexperienced coaches go straight to that because they don't know how to highlight problems and provide solutions. So it's just the halftime speech is a pep speech more than anything else. So I think those are the key differentiators if we want to talk about halftime. You chime in, Ben. What do you think?
It's funny how you mentioned like fake it till you make it. And especially with newer coaches, I remember, you know, the first games that I ever coached as a 17 or 18 year old kid, I had no idea what to say. So what would I do before the games? Go on YouTube, type in, you know, Pep Guardiola halftime speech or find one of Brian's halftime speech and just memorize it word for word. And sure enough, the same problems that would exist like within Brian's youth teams. It's like, all right, I'm going to correlate, you know, Johnny to Efra today. You know, Efra, you're not breaking the lines, or Johnny, you're not breaking the lines, or you're not doing a good job of losing your man. But I think, Gary, as you know, the more games that you coach, the more pattern recognition that you start to see on the field. And then you can start to go in and say, okay, these are the things that we've been working on in training. It's not happening today. You know, this is the message that it has to be for the team. But do you think, I don't know, Gary, what's your thoughts on, is it better to talk more about like fixing the problems, or is it better to reinforce what's actually working in the game? Let's say, you know, for that day, like the right winger has been able to take it to the left back every single time. Like, do you reinforce that with the team? Like, hey, like this is on, let's keep going. Or is it only just you're calling out the negative things with the team?
No, it's a balance for sure. The good vibes and the good stuff is critical for you to tell them, whether they're winning or losing. It's only in very rare exceptions, in my experience, very rare exceptions, that you just maybe go heavy on just one side, you know, heavy on just the bad or heavy on just the good. Because sometimes it's all bad, it's all falling apart, and it's all maybe a lack of effort and energy, right? More so than just other things. And then sometimes you just have to lean in on them hard. But that's the exception. That's the 1 in 50 times, right? Or 1 in 100 times or 1 in 25 times. But 100%, Benny, you have to highlight the good with the bad. And I think because there's limited time, maybe 10 minutes for a halftime chat, here's where experience comes into play too, because it becomes an optimization problem for the coach. What do you spend time on, right? More than anything else. So for example, if your team is winning, maybe by a goal or say a goal, okay? So you're still kind of in trouble, or you have to be careful. They can score on you. And the left winger is having a field day with their right back and causing massive damage. Maybe you spend a considerable amount of time emphasizing that. Keep giving it to homeboy, and homeboy, keep going at them and destroying them and causing massive damage. That is the key to winning this game. So you maybe spend a shit ton of time there, Ben, in what is actually working and not so much in what is not working. So it's a balancing act, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Were there moments where Brian would, you know, rip into the kids hard, or was it more of like a calm, like, hey, this is, you know, what's going wrong? I mean, you said 1 in 15, yeah, right? But yeah, was it, I mean, that's how often Brian would actually like rip into them hard.
So let me try.
And how did they respond to it?
Yeah.
How did they respond into the ripping when Brian would like go off on them?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I just threw out the 1 in 50 because I think most coaches out there, I'm being sincere, I think most coaches out there probably don't have the rapport with their players to the level that maybe Brian had it, where the players receive it the right way, where they know that the coach doesn't hate them, where they know that the coach means 100% well, where they know that the coach loves them. Okay. And I think most coaches don't have that rapport. That's why I threw out the 150, which basically means like never, or once in a whole season, maybe a coach should do that. But with Brian, I think it may have been more often than that. I don't know exactly how often, maybe 1 in 10. I don't know. And the team could have probably been winning 3-0 and he lights them up because the operation isn't what it should be. It should be. Maybe we're winning 3-0 just on pure talent alone, but the kids are not doing what they should be doing. And so you light them up anyway. And I think that also sets a good precedent for the players. Oh shit, we're winning 3-0, but this guy is not happy. You know, maybe we shouldn't be happy either, because yeah, it's true. We actually aren't performing to the level that we should be performing to. And so how would they take it, Ben? Just how I mentioned before, in a good way. And I also think it's age dependent, Benny, because it's a lot easier or a lot more acceptable or a lot better to swallow when the kids are 16 years of age or 17 years of age or 15 years of age versus if they are 10 years of age. So there's a function of age also. And lastly, I'll end that the coach forming that rapport, that good rapport with the players, is a function of age, because some coaches are really good with the older age groups and some coaches are good with the younger age groups, and some coaches are good with, or it's a rare where you have the total range, where you know how to speak to an 8-year-old and you also know how to speak to an 18-year-old. So Brian, I think, is a unique case, dude. He has the full range of empathetic qualities to be able to correctly lay into them.
You mentioned age as, you know, an important factor to consider as to how you're going to deliver your message. You know, I hate to say it, but, and I think you'll agree, Gary, kids today are getting more and more soft, meaning that let's say you're coaching a group of 8-year-olds or 9-year-olds, boys or girls, and you're just absolutely ripping into them at halftime, even if you do have a good rapport with them, you know, I think kids nowadays kind of just fold and it's like, what the fuck? Coach Gary never yells at me like this. Like, what's going on? And in the second half, they're just completely full, you know? So it's sad to see, Gary, because I think back in the day, you were able to really, you know, deliver the message in the way that you wanted to. And the kids would be like little soldiers. And it's like, all right, like, fire it up. Now, I think you have to be a little bit more careful as to how you're going to deliver the message. Otherwise, you might have 7 players on the field that are walking back onto the field second half in tears. You know?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you, Benny. Yeah, it reminds me of, and you need to find this clip and inject it, dude. You've seen this reel where they show kids born in the 80s, kids born in the 90s, kids born in the 2000s. And it's a clip where one by one, they hit their shoulder on the door frame or something when they're walking into a room, right? So kids, you know, born in the 80s, they hit their shoulder they can't just keep going, nothing, right? Kids born in the 90s, they hit their shoulder and they look, they're like, oh, and they keep walking. Kids born in the 2000s, they hit, oh, my pussy. It's so true. And I guess kids born in the 2010s, I don't remember. You're going to have to find it, right? It's like they hit their shoulder and you hear a gunshot in the back and they just fall completely.
That's hilarious.
You know which one I'm talking about?
I do. Yeah, I do. I'll inject it into this one for sure for the audience sake. But that's scary, dude. Actually, I haven't told the audience this yet, but my son will be born in 2025. So how do you make your kid not soft, Gary?
Well, I am kind of optimistic. Honestly, it's one of the, man, I've never been this optimistic about the future as I am now. I think we are going through a turning. I think the pendulum is swinging the other way, Ben. I think, you know, that whole expression of strong men make good times make weak men, weak men make tough times, right? And then the cycle repeats itself, you know, because the strong men have to come back into the picture and on you go. I think we're at that point where we're going to recycle and go back to having a strong populace.
There we go. So that means I'll be ripping into my son at halftime.
Yeah, great. That's awesome, man. But I think it is going to get worse before it gets better. So I think the country we are going to be struggling a lot more, and then the flippening will occur. It's not straight up from here. It's going to get worse, and then we're going to bounce back.
Okay. So my grandson then.
No. But by the time your kid's 8 years old, we're back, baby. 100%.
Oh, yeah?
Right. Yeah, we're back.
Let's go. Sick, dude. I'm going to bring you out of retirement and have you coach the team, dude.
All good, dude.
There you go. I like it. All right. But we talked about halftime. What about when it comes to pregame, Gary? How much of Brian's talks were about his own team's identity versus, you know, adjusting for the opponent and what they're going to see on the field? Was it more about, hey, stick to our identity, possess, press, lose your man, find the right moments to, you know, implement the attacking patterns? Or was it a lot of like Brian had already seen film and, you know, these are the adjustments that we're going to have to make? And also, you know, how much of it was motivational, you know, like, hey, you're bringing in the semifinal, all your family is here, your friends, you know, everything that you worked for, trained for. Did he sprinkle some of that into there too?
Ben, it's all of the above. Okay. It's just like in the halftime speech, it's just an optimization thing or a feel as to how much time you allocate to those three areas. So that depends on a whole variety of factors. It's one factor is how long have you had this team? Okay. Second factor, right? Because if you haven't had the team very long, maybe you emphasize the team identity. Maybe you emphasize the training sessions, the building out of the back, how you guys do it, you know, getting into the midfield and then getting into the attacking third and the structure of it all. If you're still new to the team, because the kids have not really had any level of competence or mastery associated with it. So that's a huge focus. But if you've had the team for 3 years and all the kids know how they play, you don't spend much time in pregame talking about, okay, guys, let's build, let's do this, let's do that, let's do the other thing, and the shift focus. So it also depends on the level of the opponent. Because, for example, I know in the module, we filmed a lot when we were in Spain. I think we had a tournament in Spain. I think it was Mick Cup. And, you know, you're getting ready to play against FC Barcelona, the real FC Barcelona. Are you getting ready to play a real La Liga Academy team, you know, or real first division academy? So in that instance, yeah, you don't necessarily have to remind the team identity because they know it already. In that instance, like, hey, we know we've scouted the opposition. We know Ansu Fati, the lethal number nine that Barcelona has. We have to figure out how to shut him down. And so you game plan for that. And then that is what you emphasize to the boys. You know, maybe you, and it's not just an individual thing. It's a collective thing. Yes, individuals like, hey, to your center back or center backs, hey, never leave him alone. Let's make sure we're always 2v1 against this guy. If he drifts into the midfield, you guys maybe let him drift into the midfield and stay back. Don't get suckered in or get suckered in. Somebody go with him and man mark him. So you have all of those sorts of things. And then the collective of how we're going to stop Barcelona from building out of the back, for instance, because in that particular game, And this is freely available on YouTube. You can see the full match. Maybe we can put a little link, not only in the show notes, but in the actual video, Ben. The game plan is press the hell out of them. You know, go into the front and press. And to a large degree, that was awesome. You know, we did phenomenal work. So it's more game tactics and it's more opponent-based pre-game chats with the boys. And then obviously the motivational is quite important too. Hey, we're playing, literally that team, Benny, was considered by the Spaniards, right, as the crown jewel of all time of FC Barcelona's academy. Because they had Ansu Fati, they had Takefusa Kubo, they had, what's the little curly-haired kid who's on the Dutch national team now?
Xavi
Simons, like star-studded team. So you want to inject, the kids are already up for it, but you want to inject a motivational speech like, they ain't shit. You guys are the best in the United States and we're among the best in the world. Let's get after them. Let's eat them for lunch, right? So it was those two things and not so much, oh, let's play out of the back. And yeah, they already know that. They already know how to play football. So, and the other extreme, Ben, is if you're playing a shit team, a shocking team that you know you're going to win 8-0 or 10-0 or something, maybe you emphasize individual goals for that match. So, hey, Leo, I want you to work on this part of your game for this match. Or, you know what I mean? Or the outside back, I want you to work on this part of your game because the collective doesn't matter. There isn't going to be any problem solving. We're going to destroy this team.
Two things, Gary. One, before I forget, obviously I know that before the game on the field, like you would just, Brian would obviously be doing all the coaches, but I'm curious, like at the hotels and in the pregame talks, would you give the kids advice or you give them your own speech? And then the other thing that I wanted to say is, you know, when you guys did go to that tournament, I loved seeing the professionalism that you guys instilled in the team. Like there's a picture of all the kids rolling up to the, you know, pre-game or pre-tournament parade. All of them are wearing suits with 343 on it, you know? And I think just giving them that little boost of confidence to say like, hey, you may be playing the best teams in the world, but you guys are considered to be, you know, the best in the US and you're here to compete. You're not going to sit down for anybody. So I just wanted to add that in and I'll throw in a picture of it to the video as well. So the audience can see that, but anyways, back to, you know, would you give the team advice or would you just let more Brian do all the talking? And maybe, yeah. You know, no, go ahead.
It depends. Well, first and foremost, Brian and his assistants, of which we're all on the same page. So because we've all had countless meetings over days, weeks, months, and years. And for this particular tournament, if that's what you're referring to, we're all on the same page, Benny. We all know exactly the goals, the team goals, the individual goals, who's performing now, who isn't performing, who has a good attitude, who's not having a good attitude. We know everything, okay? And so with that in mind, just to emphasize that there's uniformity in the messaging. If Brian, say, were to forget about something, maybe in the team dinner meeting, oh man, I forgot to tell, you know, Leo X, Y, or Z or something like that, maybe, you know, I would go and talk to Leo and give him X, Y, or Z. Or maybe if there's a serendipitous moment where I'm just chilling in the lobby and a few of the boys, you know, were relaxing in the lobby or came by and they're like, hey, Gary, what's up? And they come chill with me. Then maybe I would inject a few words here or there, but not that much, Ben, not that much, because you also don't want to overload the kids, particularly at that age, with information. Like, let them enjoy all their time. Keep it small and simple. And not always about football also. Does that make sense? So there's that. And the same thing when they're older, frankly speaking. Although I had a better time or better way of forming a rapport with the older age group. So if you're U15 and above or 15 and above, then I find it easier to relate to them versus if they're, you know, 8 to 14 year olds. Then it's like, I don't even know how to talk to these fools. I'm being sincere. You know how I talked about dynamic range of a coach's capabilities. it's challenging for me to talk to an 11-year-old. No, I don't want to talk to an 11-year-old. Can I talk to a 16-year-old? Yes. 11-year-old, not so much. 22-year-old, even better I can do.
You don't like kids, G?
It's not that I don't like kids, dude. It's just like, I don't know, man. I don't have much to say.
It's funny you say that, though, Gary, because I think, you know, with that group in particular, when Alex, Uli, Efra, all these kids are, you know, 10 years old, 11 years old, I think they all respected you. And maybe it came from a place of like, you know, you kind of were a little bit more distant from them versus if they would be like 15 or 16 or 17. And the fact that you were more distant, it's like Gary's kind of like this mysterious figure. You know, obviously they know that you're Brian's brother and you'll interject these little things. But I think just doing that, like it kind of helped for them to like look up to you. And like, I mean, I know for me personally, when I was maybe 11 or 12 on Brian, when I was on Brian's team, and I would see you, you know, in the corner during training. But yeah, seriously, I'm like, oh, like, you know, it was cool to see that even though you weren't a coach on the team or an assistant coach, you still like cared enough to be out there on the sidelines, or you'd come and record our games. I think it went a long way with the kids.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was actually a strategy as well. It's part of my personality, as you well know, Benny, of being more in solitude and isolation and thinking to myself and not having human voices all around me interjecting their opinions and thoughts. Like I leave me alone. You know, I want to be off in the cabin and, you know, in my own cabin in the woods sort of character. But it was also deliberate, you know, and deliberate, not just from my end, but from Brian's end as well. You know, Brian would leverage that, and he knew the power that came with, hey, there's that guy over there that knows a lot about soccer and he's just silently observing. You know what I mean? Just right. Silently observing. And then once in a while, that dude that's just silently observing comes and tells Brian, you know, a few things here or there, and then goes back to silently observing. It's kind of like, oh shit, you know, what's going on?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's funny, Gary. I think a lot of people that don't truly know you, like they see you as like a dick, or like, it's like, somebody that doesn't want to be around people. But like when I see you interact with other humans, you're actually like a really nice guy.
Cool. Thanks, Benny.
No, I'm serious, dude. Because everybody sees you as like a villain or doesn't like to be around people. And I'm sure like you like to be alone, right? But when it comes down to it, you're a nice guy, dude.
Hey, no, I think so too, man. I think I'm among the nicest of guys. Honestly, right. It's just I like being alone as well. And I think, in my opinion, people can't stand being alone. They want to be social and be in a social environment and just talk and talk and have people talk to them, and back and forth you go, and being loud and a lot of laughter and a lot of, I'm just very introverted that way. If I'm in those situations, it just drains my battery like you wouldn't believe, Benny. I can't survive. You know, if I have one of those social interactions for say 30 minutes, dude, my battery is dead now. And I'm useless for the rest of the day. I can't work. I can't focus. I can't concentrate. It's a disaster. I need to be alone in a way. No question.
How do you teach for 8 hours a day then, dude? Is it because only you are doing the talking, or?
Correct. And I love student engagement. I actually tell them in the classroom environment, hey guys, don't be a bunch of mummies and statues out there. I get bored doing all the talking, like engage with me and talk with me. But it's different, Ben. It's different because it's not really a social dynamic. It's more of like, hey, we're intensely focused on a particular subject and we want to dig deep into this subject. And I want you to help facilitate, your understanding of a particular subject. So it's a different thing that's engaging in my brain. It's not like, oh, my boyfriend did this weekend, you know, blah, 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 blah. What do you think it means? Like, get the fuck out of here. Don't talk to me about that shit.
Yeah, no, I hear you, dude. I feel like a lot of the moms on the team would come up to you and start venting to you or ranting to you just because you were right there, no?
No, not so much, because like you said, the perception was don't talk to Gary, which I love.
Yeah, that's fun.
That was the whole goal. I had my sunglasses. I wouldn't sit at midfield because that's where all the commotion is at. Once in a while, I would because I needed a good vantage point. But I just go off to the corner flag, you know, and just chill over there. And that sends a very clear signal. Don't bother me.
No, it was funny, dude, because I guess my mom saw you at the game, and she's like, does Gary and Brian talk, or did they have a falling out? Like, how come Gary wasn't sitting with Brian? Which laughing.
No, and by the way, I don't know if they saw where I sat. I sat at the very corner of the bleachers. I didn't sit in the middle, and the middle third, yeah. No, all the way in the back corner of the bleachers by myself is where I went to sit.
Yeah, as far away as possible from anybody.
100%, dude. That's why I can't stand going to games either, like professional games. I can't stand going and sitting in a stadium surrounded, especially in this country, surrounded by people. And you know how they pack people in there too. So you're naturally brushing up against others, people's arms and stuff. And like you're like, fuck off. And I said, especially here in the United States, like an MLS match or something, people aren't even focused on football. They aren't even focused on what's happening on the field. I hear obnoxious conversations over here. Oh, I got a shot for my daughter's prom dress. And, you know, Cindy this and Caroline that. And or somebody over here saying, hey, did you see the fucking Buccaneers, you know, they fucking blew it, you know, fourth and goal or something like that. I'm like, fuck off. Shut the fuck up and watch the match. I can't do it, Benny. I cannot do it. The times that I would go to, say, Galaxy games, and by the way, I've never paid for a Galaxy game, okay? The times I would go, you know that in the corner of the field where they have the big, they have a bar there or something like that, and they have, you could just stand and watch from the corner. Yeah. The corner flag up at the very top. I would just do that. I would have great, quote unquote, great seats in the stadium. I'm like, I'm not going to sit over there. I'm just going to go way the fuck over there in the corner and just observe and be away from humans.
I like it, dude. We went down a huge rabbit hole there.
No, but listen, you're talking about game management, okay, or team management, and the personality of the coach or the coaches or the manager matters. It really does matter. Yeah. And so that's what, and one way to flex your influence, because this is all about influence, right? Management. One way to flex your influence is doing things like this, is being distant, but you can't be the head coach and be distant. Right, the head coach has to be very empathetic and be there and intimately tied with the group and be able to be social and all those sorts of things. But I was used as an instrument or a tool because of this particular quality.
Yeah, that makes sense. How did the pregame warm-up look like, Gary? Because that's something that kills me, and I'm sure you've seen it too, is you'll see a team and even like they consider themselves high level, and then you see their warm-up for the game. It's like 15 players standing in a line. The coach is there and they pass it to him. He lays it off. They shoot it, and they're doing that for like 30 minutes. You know, that drives me crazy to see that. What did Brian's warm up with his youth teams look like? Especially like when they're in Spain preparing for, you know, the play against Barcelona.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember exactly what every match looked like, but generally speaking, it's mostly functional in the way it's run. So what does that mean? That means, you know, there's a chunk of time allocated for the back four or the back five, if we're including the keeper, to just simulate building out of the back, right? And just like the training exercise in the 3-4-3 membership, they're just doing that maybe for a handful of minutes. You know, the defenders maybe are then also swept aside, you know, the center backs or even the outside backs, and they're practicing clearances with their headers and then advancing their lines, you know, and then retreating their lines. And you just have to see this, because say I'm working with them in the pregame, it's if I have the ball, right, and I'm facing them, then they practice retreating. You know what I mean? And then if I turn with the ball and go this way, then they practice advancing their lines. And I'm simulating maybe I'm playing the six or a center mid or something like that on the team. And then also clearances, those sorts of things. And then the strikers are obviously working more on finishing. Maybe the midfielders are involved in that. So it's kind of like an attacking pattern sort of thing. So you start from the central midfield and they distribute to the winger, and the wingers maybe serving crosses, different types of crosses, you know, in the air, on the ground, retreated crosses, and then finishing the play off. So that is the basic broad strokes of what a pregame looks like.
Got it. So no line of 20.
No line of 20. No line of 20. Again, I empathize with coaches first, new coaches. And again, what I consider new coaches, maybe under 5 years of coaching. I still kind of consider you relatively new. It's hard, man, because it takes experience to manage and orchestrate all of this and have it work with top performance, because you also don't want your players to be doing it, you know, just running through the motions. You want them intently focused and trying to execute pregame activities at their peak performance so that they're ready to be in peak performance for the actual match. And I also empathize with coaches who don't have at least one assistant, because how do you do all this functional work, you know, with everybody if you don't have somebody helping you?
Yeah, that's true. You know, it takes a village. And I know that Brian always had at least two or three assistants with him. But yeah, moving on, Gary, I mean, we talked about halftime now, pregame. When it comes to in-game coaching, in-game management, you know, obviously I mentioned before about this audiogram that we had posted where there's a big swindle going on where coaches just, they say to let the kids play, but so they don't have to do, you know, much from the sidelines. A lot of debate in the comments. Some people agreed with you, Gary. Some people said you're an idiot. Some people said you should never be allowed near a soccer field again. So in terms of for the coach in the game, Gary, you know, if you're a parent, you know, what are the things that you want to be hearing from the coach when they're on the sideline, when the game is happening? Is it the entire game they're yelling instructions? Is it, you know, off the ball things like to shift or step, things like that? What should the parents be hearing from the coach?
Again, it depends, Ben. Again, it depends. I will say this. If a coach is doing good work, then what that means is that their training sessions look like they're developing an actual team, meaning they're training their players to build out of the back. So exercises like we show on the 3-4-3 platform, they are training how the midfielders are supposed to move and operate such that the back line can give them the ball. They're supposed to be training the wingers maybe how to lose their man for the same reason, so that they can receive the ball and not having a defender or two draped on their backs. They're supposed to be training attacking patterns, so specific, reproducible, common patterns that exist in football naturally. So how to attack and then finish the play. So they're supposed to be training all these sorts of things on the training grounds, okay? That's number one. Because if they're not doing that, we've got bigger problems on our hands. But it's all related to in-game management. If you have a coach that is doing those sorts of things, then during the game should be treated as another training opportunity. It is not supposed to be you train them two times a week or three times a week and then just plop your ass on the bench and just let's see how the kids do in the game. Let's see if they actually incorporate the things that we did on the training grounds. No, the game is a training opportunity also. And so you should have the coach giving instructions from the sidelines if they are needed on those things that you train during the week, on how to build out of the back, how the midfielders should be moving, on how the attacking patterns should be occurring. So it's not necessarily a joysticking exercise the entire match. But for example, if they are not building out of the back, you should be vocal about it. Hey guys, we build out of the back, right? And hey, Leo, center back, give it to Mikey, the other center back. Mikey, you know, give it to your right back at this point. Give it to Dani Alves, you know, don't go forward yet. You know, there's no opportunity to go recycle it through the back four again, recycle it again. So giving those sorts of verbal indications or instructions is what a parent should be looking for in a good coach. It's all contingent on whether that coach is training the team properly during the week. Because if you're fucking around during the week and you're doing all these Korver individual skill work and teaching them how to juggle the ball or teaching them how to do step overs or dribble through cones, then what the fuck are you going to tell the kids during the match? What are you going to tell? There's nothing to tell them. It's an individual game. It's an individual game at that point. And so, yes, in that instance, it's just a pickup game. There is no team. And so in that instance, yeah, the coach should just sit down and shut up because he's not even a coach.
You're going to yell at them, scissor, when this will show ready, going at the right left back.
Yeah. Oh, right. Right. No, so it all stems from there, Ben.
And
the opposite isn't true. You can't have a coach who's shocking on the training grounds, not actually teaching team things. And then come the weekend, you're trying to get the team to do team things. Yeah. What is that? Let me address, because I haven't read the comments, but you said some comments are saying, oh, this is up, Gary, you're full of shit. You know, yeah, you should, coaches should shut up on the sidelines. They're probably the type of coach that I'm talking about. Fucking shocking. They don't train actual teams. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. And so, yeah, if you don't know what the F you're doing, then you certainly don't know how the F to manage a game and give instructions from the sideline during a match. You have no idea. So, of course, they think maybe everybody is like this. And so since they don't know what the hell to say or do in a match, they think everybody else doesn't know what to say or do during a match. And so their natural mental model or philosophy is like, why would you be telling the kids to do anything? Yeah, I mean, honestly, a lot of it stems. So that's the incompetence side of the equation. And then there's the swindle side of the equation. The swindle side of the equation, which is what that audiogram was all about, is that there are folks out there who deliberately know they can't coach. Like, they know they're incompetent and they don't want to be exposed as incompetent people. And so the way that they get exposed is by competent people demonstrating their competence. So they want nobody to demonstrate competence. They hate excellence, Benny. They hate people who can actually do stuff. No, they hate it. They resent it. They envy it. And so they want everybody to be stupid.
Yeah, it's so stupid, Gert. I mean, one guy's like, oh, I'll pluck any kid from the streets of Brazil that's never been coached before in his life, and he's going to be, yeah, 1,000 times better than any kid that this guy has ever coached. Just stupid comments like that, dude.
Yeah, it's all hyperbolic nonsense. Like, okay, I'll go to China, who has amazing physics programs and way better education system than the United States, and I'll just pluck any old student from there and make them a rocket scientist better than Elon Musk or something. It's the stupidest shit ever, dude. It's so dumb. No, they hate competence. They hate people of competence, people who accomplish things, Ben. They hate it.
Yeah, it's funny, dude. Somebody like direct messages. They're like, oh, like, are you a current coach or current club administrator? Like, I didn't see any of your qualifications listed.
Well, no, but they're part of the swindle. They have to do that, Benny.
Yeah.
They actually expose themselves by combating what that audiogram said, that this whole fucking youth soccer scene is a huge swindle. They combat it because they need the swindle to continue. They can't have an educated parent demographic. They can't have it. All these folks, the Brazil comment, that coach, if you were to go to Brazil and start talking to football to those kids in the park or whatever, they'll look at him like, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
It's hilarious.
It's amazing, dude. It's awesome. We should have, I told you before, we should have like a regular once a month sort of thing, a toxic soccer episode, you know, where we get all these comments that we might be getting on YouTube or on Instagram or on Twitter. We just get a dozen of them or half a dozen of them or whatever. And then we just riff on it, you know, these toxic folks.
I like it. All right, Gary. Well, wrapping up, you know, we've talked pregame, midgame, halftime. How was it during the postgame? I know it's obviously case by case, you know, but what was usually the message from Brian, you know? Let's say, you know, in the Barcelona game, I want to say that did they win that game, Gary, or they lost?
The Barcelona game, I think we lost 2-1. Shoot, it's been so long now, Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think we lost by one goal.
Okay. So let's take two examples just to end it. How was the talk after, you know, a loss like that? And then how was it after a win?
I'm just going to make a general statement. I think it was always generally positive. After the game, almost always, win, loss, whatever happened, that's in the past. And we need to look forward, you know, hey, we learned some lessons. Now we're going to take corrective actions on these lessons. We're going to use this to get better. and I'll see you on Tuesday for training. So very short and sweet, unless it was maybe a tournament sort of thing. Then obviously the message is still one of discipline. It's kind of like, hey, we won, we drew, we lost, we have another game tomorrow or whatever it is. Don't do anything stupid. Go to the hotel, relax, rest, hydrate yourself. I'll see you at dinner. We'll talk about the game plan for tomorrow then or something like that. And then just everybody go their own separate way. So very brief, Ben, and almost always positive, if not right. always.
So even if the team had a shocking performance or, you know, they lost 3-0, it wasn't Brian ripping into them after the game?
No. I don't recall a single time where that's happened.
I think that's huge for the kids because, you know, they want to feel like they've done everything they played their best and, you know, they did everything that they could to win for the team and for Brian. So I think the message after every game is huge. You know, if a coach is like ripping his team after every game, they can easily, you know, lose the love of the game or get, you know, tired of playing for this team. Now, I'm not saying like to not address the negatives, but I think if you're putting the team down in a negative way, it's like, why would you want to play for this coach? You know, you got to show them some love after the game. And I think Brian did a good job of that. Is like after his post game chat, you would kind of flip a switch from their coach to like now, like they're his friend, you know what I'm saying? And show love to the players and make them feel good, even if they didn't have their best day.
100% correct, Benny. 100% correct. It's not about football anymore. It's right. About being human after the match.
100%. All right, brother. So toxic comments episode's coming up soon then, huh? You got to go through all these comments on the post, dude.
I just don't have time, Ben. I don't have time. Wow. And then also, like, what's the point? I've seen it all. I've heard it all. I know their arguments better than they know their own arguments. I know their side inside and out. I know it. I literally know their arguments better than they know it themselves.
Yeah. I wish you would respond to some of them, dude. But like, to roast them, dude.
Well, we can. Well, but this is what's more efficient is maybe you collect whichever ones you want to collect, and then we allocate an hour like we usually do on a weekly basis to record an episode, and then that's how I respond.
I like
it. It's better. It's better than me just sitting there and looking at these comments and then writing some stuff, and also like I don't want to argue with idiots, you know. And like you're not on my level. Like why am I? You're not going to take time away from me. You aren't. Yeah. Worthy of my time. You're not on my level, period. Yeah. Like why the fuck would, and just because he's in the news, right? Elon go to his Twitter feed and respond to no name nobodies who are criticizing him. Why?
Yeah. Now somebody's going to call and Gary, oh, comparing himself to Elon Musk.
I don't know what else to say, Ben. It's just dumb. And yeah. Like I said, I've been around for so long. The haters have been here for so long. Ever since we first published our first article in 2009, I've had haters in the comments of my articles all the time. And guess what? Fast forward 15 years, and many of those same people who would talk shit back in 2009, 2010, 2012 are now have the philosophy and mental models that I was advocating for way back then. They just needed 10 or 15 years for their education to catch up. They're just perpetually 10, 15, 20 years behind. They don't get it. Yeah. Just like now, Major League Soccer is talking about, or the rumor has it, maybe we should switch to the international calendar, right? To better align the transfer windows and that'll be better. No shit, fuck face, you know? And a lot of the fan base now, because the league is suggesting maybe this could happen. Now all the MLS reporters and fan base are kind of agreeing because the league said so. Those of us who know football and been saying this forever, you know, they would tell us, they'd be haters too. Oh, you're just retarded. How are we going to play in Minnesota in the winter, you know, or all these places? I understand the weather stuff, but so does Russia, you know, and so does Germany. And so do, snowfall there is insane. The cold is insane. And, You just figure it out. Or the same thing with promotion relegation. People are just so far behind the curve. They have no idea, you know, what is going on. It'll take them 10 or 15 years. So to bring full circle, these monkeys who are in the Instagram comments talking about, oh, you know, no, you don't know what you're talking about, Gary. Coach should shut up on the sidelines. If they stick with the game and if they continue deliberately trying to get better and better and better, 10 years from now, they're going to be saying the same thing that I'm saying now. And they'll look back at themselves. They'll look back at themselves and say, they'll see themselves as such idiots, you know, in the past. And this is true of everybody. It's a learning curve, Ben. Like if you look at yourself when you were 10 years old, do you think you were super knowledgeable and amazing and aware of the world and the ways of the world? No, you think you're just a child who didn't know any better. Or just don't even have to go that far back, Ben. Look at yourself as an 18-year-old. As an 18-year-old, you probably thought you knew a lot of stuff, you know? And you look back at yourself as an 18-year-old, you're like, I was a dumbass. I didn't know jack diddly squat. And it goes on and on and on like that. So cool. Yeah. Let's have a toxic episode, dude. I think it'll be good.
Sounds good, dude. Did we miss anything in terms of game management? I feel like we covered a lot of it.
I think for the most part, we did okay. Maybe one more remark regarding professionalism, because you briefly mentioned that the kids, the team, you know, were dressed up in blazers, you know, and all formal, and they would walk in an organized fashion to and from games. That just goes a long way from a management perspective, because it mentalizes them into this is like serious business sort of thing. And it aligns everybody and unifies everybody into being one team that is also different from all other teams, right? So that is also a good management thing to do. And I think it's a good thing from a development point of view to start teaching them a little bit about professionalism, which extends far beyond just soccer.
Incredible seats that you guys got, dude. 3-for-3 embroidery on them.
Yeah, it was awesome. And we funded it ourselves. The parents didn't pay for it. The club didn't pay for it. We funded it.
Sick.
That's just how much we care, Ben.
Yeah. You went to downtown LA to the alleys or what?
We did. We did indeed. Picked it all out and then, you know, bargained for embroidery and then said, hey, here's the freaking logo. Let's execute.
Sick, dude. All right, brother. Good stuff, dude.
You didn't ask how this ties into promotion relegation.
Oh, that's very true. Tell me, dude, how does game management tie into promotion relegation?
Well, Benny, do you think game management is important?
1,000%.
Do you think good game management helps in the win-loss column?
I do.
Do you think game management helps coaches become better coaches and clubs become better clubs and players become better players? Okay. So without promotion relegation, it doesn't matter if you win, lose, or draw matches, because you're in the same league, in the same status forever, no matter what. And so you don't have to be the best that you can be in this category either. And so guess what? You won't be. And guess what? The sport suffers for it.
So you could be the worst game management coach there is and it wouldn't matter.
It wouldn't matter one bit. And by the way, if we want to talk about parity, if we're talking about MLS, where they enforce rosters to be roughly all of the same level, then the probabilities of win, loss, or draw is a random thing for the most part, completely random. Yeah. So it'll mostly then be a function of, you know, if you have different difference makers on the field. So maybe a few teams out there in a particular season has a few difference makers. Their DPs, designated players, are better than the other team's designated players. And those are the teams that end up winning a little bit more of the time. And that doesn't require game management. You think Messi requires game management from the coach? I think it came out recently, honestly. Hey, this is a nice little clip that you can insert. Or not a clip. It's just an image of something Mascherano said when asked about managing Messi. And he's like, I don't manage Messi. Like, what are you going to tell Messi? You know, you give Messi complete and total latitude and freedom to do what it is that he thinks is best to do in the game. And off you go. If we want to relate it to the youth game, Ben, if there were promotion relegation, then the coaches and the clubs that they work for really want to win. And so you want to align all the incentives. You want the best coaches, right, in that instance, and not just the best trainer, but who is the best game manager.
Messi manages Mascherano, dude.
It's true. I'm sure a lot of that is true, Ben. It's hard. You know, sometimes I regret invoking Messi, and it's the same thing that when I view other people invoke Messi's name to make a particular point, because it's an outlier, right? Yeah. So I don't like when I do it. I certainly don't like when other people do it, but I think people get it that I'm just trying to use the outlier to maybe make a broader point, even though, yeah, we just have to be cautious. We have to be cautious.
No, there will never be another Messi or a player as good as him, no?
Yeah, there's been testimonials from coaches who have coached Maradona back in the day. So one particular coach tried to tell Maradona, hey, fucking stay on the left side, you know? And, this was an exception. So here's an exception to the rule. I think it was Alfio Basile, okay? Argentine national team coach back in the 90s, I think it was. And he told a story where he told Maradona, hey, stay on the left side. And Maradona would just ignore him and come to the interior. But Basile was a strong character. So he called Maradona to the sideline. He's like, hey, listen, man, if you don't stay on the left side, we're going to have to fight. Straight up. That was the comment. And so Maradona decided, okay, I guess I'll stay on the left side. And, you know, that ended up being the reason that they won. So I don't know, just a funny little anecdote of an exception where the super duper outrageous GOAT said, okay, fine, I'll listen to you, coach.
I like that comment from the coach, though. Yeah, 9 out of 10 coaches wouldn't say that, dude.
But it's interesting game management, because he's not either you play here or I'm going to bench you, you know, or like you're not going to bench this guy. That's impossible. You will be crucified by the entire country and you're fired immediately if you bench this guy. So how do you manage a player of that characteristic? You have to do something else. So what did this guy decide to say? He's like, listen, man, if you don't come out here, we're just going to have to fight. We're probably going to have to go in the locker room or whatever, and we are fighting.
Oh, shit. That's funny, dude. That's funny.
All right, man. Drop the mic.
Good stuff, dude. I will see you on Friday. No more high school, dude. Okay.
Perfect. Perfect, Benny.
So I'll head out to Irvine if you're free.
That'd be great. That'd be great, man.
All right, brother.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.